Peter, let's go back now, talk about this lie detector test. It's important, I think, as we build the credibility of Scarpa and also find out why they want to discredit him.
Okay, well, I'll go as close to a verbatim as I can with respect to what Angela told me. And this is coming from Greg directly to Angela Clemente, a forensic investigator. She said that he was visited by a polygraph administrator from Washington office, which is curious that they didn't send somebody from Denver, and that the guy inflated the cuff, which is part of the procedure, and began asking questions about 1996 and Ramzi Youssef. And Greg was like, what are you asking me this stuff for? Don't you want to know about Terry Nichols? And the guy got up and walked out of the room and came back and began asking him a question relating to whether or not he had been given some kind of benefit by one of the guards in the prison. And he's like, he couldn't understand where he was going with that. Then, according to Greg, the guy said, don't answer verbally, just nod your head for yes and shake your head for no, which...
on a lie detector test.
Any polygraph examiner will tell you it was absolutely not part of the protocol. And then when Greg, like, I don't know how long that went on, the guy reportedly got up, leaned 2 inches away from his face and said, the book is now closed on Greg Scarpa Jr. You're a fabricator. You're a liar. Don't ever call us again. And Greg said, wait a minute. You're not going to take any of these notes I have from Terry Nichols? You're not going to test them for fingerprints to see if I'm credible? He's offering him notes
from
Terry
God.
Nichols. The guy walks out without them. Now, again, I was not in the jail.
Right.
I didn't see it.
I understand.
But this Agent Stern was there, and he was summoned to Washington a few days after recently, apparently. So, look, let's understand who is who here. Valerie Caproni, C-A-P-R-O-N-I, is the general counsel now to the FBI. She's the head lawyer for the FBI under Director Robert Mueller. Valerie Caproni was the former, as I said, head of the criminal division in the Eastern District that presided over this cover-up of the TWA 800 case that, was the one that had the most to lose if Scarpa Jr. had been made credible and that they believed him with respect to his father. She had the most to lose. All the cases in the Eastern District were under her command. Furthermore, let's talk about who else Valerie Caproni is. There's a courageous journalist named Jim Sanders, who you may know.
Oh, yeah, I know him well.
Jim Sanders, as you know, was an advocate along with Jack Cashel, another journalist I respect, with the missile theory. Now, I don't happen to agree with the missile theory, but I respect their tenacity, their thoroughness, and their desire to get at the truth.
And Jim got into trouble because he was given a little bit of a seat from TWA 800 that apparently had some kind of bomb residue on it.
Well, here's what happened. Jim had his wife as a flight attendant, and they were in contact with a pilot who had actually been in the hangar at Calverton, and that pilot apparently had flown the plane from Greece, was very much concerned, of course, colleagues died, crew members, friends of theirs died. So this pilot, found a seat cover that purported, or at least had some streaks of orange on it that they thought could have been missile fuel. They weren't sure, okay?
Right.
So they obtained a sample, and they brought a sample to a producer at CBS News named Christina Borgensen. Now, I can tell you, George, when I was a correspondent on 2020, if somebody, like, from an incident like that had brought me a sample, I would have absolutely gone out and had it tested to see what does it mean? Was it just glue, as the FBI later alleged that it was, or was it some kind of foreign substance? Could it have been an explosive residue or whatever? I definitely, as a reporter, would have pursued that. Well, Valerie Caproni called CBS, according to Christina Borgensen. She's called into the head lawyer's office on West 57th Street. At 9th Avenue, our CBS News is over on 57th between 9th and 10th. She gets called into the office of this lawyer. The lawyer says, Valerie Caproni is threatening to put you in front of a grand jury tomorrow. There are two FBI agents in the lobby. They want the sample. We're giving them the sample back. And Christina's going, what are you why are you giving them the, come on. And they fired Christina Borgensen. She's gone from CBS News over this. Valerie Caproni then indicts Jim Sanders and his wife, the flight attendant. And even after the FBI sides with the NTSB and decides that this is an accident, George, not a crime. They still prosecuted him and his wife in federal court. They spent all kinds of taxpayer money prosecuting him. What, if it's not a crime scene, then what's the crime? You know, what, tampering? I mean, I'm trying to figure out what this is. The point is, rarely in America does a federal prosecutor go to this level of trouble to shut up a journalist.
True. No, you're absolutely right.
And then, I just want to read you this one line. It's in my book, Cover Up. When I tried to get to see Greg Scarpa this summer, I wrote to Warden Hood, and just here's the line, very quick. He says, "The Bureau of Prisons makes every effort to accommodate media personnel as long as the request does not negatively affect the security and operation of our institutions. It is my determination, based on my sound correctional judgment, that to grant your request at this time could pose a risk to the internal security of this institution and to the safety of staff, inmates, and members of the public. Therefore, your request is denied."
Well, you know what you should do? Just tell him you want to talk to him on the phone.
Well, then no, what I mean, first of all,
assuming that's him.
Well, I appealed the decision, and then they rejected the appeal, and now I have the right to appeal to the Bureau of Prisons in Kansas, which I'm going to do. But here's the point, George. If Greg Scarpa Jr. was a perpetrator of a hoax and a scam, if he's just a mob wise guy from Brooklyn who just made this whole thing up, what do they care who he talks to? Why don't they put him on Live with You for 3 hours one night? What do they care? In other words, if he doesn't have any probative information, why are they being so protective over him?